Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The war over tobacco is nothing if not epic. It's been fought on Madison Avenue, in Congress, at cash registers, and in courts. The battlefield and the prize is you, of course, to make you a smoker, to make you quit. America's great historical retreat from smoking has stalled, but the dying goes on. Now the FDA is planning to put big, gruesome images of smoking's destruction right on cigarette packs. Ruined lungs, a corpse in a coffin. Will it work? This hour on Point, the new plan to fight tobacco. Joining me first today from New York is Duff Wilson, reporter for the New York Times. He covers the tobacco industry and has been watching the global battle over smoking. Duff Wilson, thanks very much for being here.
Happy to be on, Tom. Thanks.
Big meeting going on right now in Uruguay. Global meeting. What's it about?
It's about a global anti-smoking treaty, anti-tobacco treaty sponsored by the World Health Organization. 171 countries have ratified that treaty. They're trying to come up with some kind of consistent worldwide regulations to regulate cigarettes and advertising and smoke-free spaces and the warning labels on cigarettes worldwide.
And that has been it's been a tough battle. You write that big global tobacco companies have fought back and fought back hard, picking off countries and their campaigns one by one, trying to stymie them.
They are. It's very interesting because these companies are usually on the defensive in court, being sued for health effects on smokers and by governments. But in a few cases now, they're kind of suing governments in court because they think that their health warnings or their tobacco policies have gone too far. So the notable one is Philip Morris International, mm-hmm. the makers of Marlboro,
yep.
which is the leading cigarette company in the world, has sued Uruguay, kind of a small country in South America, as you know, over its law to have an 80% of the package covered with a warning label. And Philip Morris says that's just too far. 50%, they can accept. 80% is too far. So they're suing Uruguay. At the same time, all these public health officials are meeting in Uruguay, as it happens, to talk about the World Health Organization treaty.
What's the argument that tobacco companies make? I mean, cigarettes kill people. They kill lots and lots of people. The leading cause of avoidable death in this country, never mind the rest of the world. So 80% gross rotten lung on a cigarette package is not attractive. On the other hand, this is a deadly thing. What's the argument you make it can be made against it?
Their argument is that they have property rights to their trademarks and their intellectual property that they've developed over the years, establishing their brands, like the Marlboro brand. And if 80% of the package is covered with a picture of a diseased lung or something, there's almost no room to put on their trademark and their brand name.
And
so they argue that.
With Uruguay's gross domestic product, you tell us, is half of the size of some of these big tobacco companies. So it's a real fight there. These markets around the world are so important, in part, you remind us, Duff, because for the cigarette companies, a lot of their smokers in the United States and Europe are quitting or dying, so they're really looking to build new markets in countries where they still have the opportunity.
They are. They're focused on the developing world, and it's really interesting to see, World Health Authorities talking about the scourge of tobacco and the cancers and the deaths and stuff on the one hand, and on the other, these companies like British American Tobacco and Philip Morris, with their company strategies, you know, to increase their revenues and profits, they're charging ahead as businesses to try to expand their businesses, especially in the developing world.
You have a sense of what's coming on American packaging. How does it compare with what's being done around the world? I mean, I've seen some of these images that will soon enough be on American cigarette packages, but I've seen some from Uruguay and elsewhere that are even more oh my gosh, that is really gross.
They are awful, some of those pictures. America was the first one to put any little warning on cigarette packs, the Surgeon General's warning. But since then, it's really fallen behind the rest of the world, where over 30 countries have those kind of pictures and graphic images of disease on their cigarette packs. So in the U.S., they finally passed some tobacco legislation last year. Before that, these products were completely unregulated. And a part of that's to put a graphic warning on cigarette packs in 2012. So that's what, 2 years from now.
That's what we'll see here. Hey, Duff, what are the cigarette companies' strategies here? I mean, cigarette smoking is under attack all over the place, and yet it sort of stalled out those quitting in the States at around 20%. So they've got this, everybody knows now that it's a sort of mortal threat very often to smokers. Mm-hmm. What's their long-term strategy? To stay in pushing cigarettes and tobacco? To get out of it? What do you see?
To stay in cigarettes and tobacco. They have 1.4 billion customers who are addicted to their products. So it's a pretty good business, and it's price insensitive for the most part. People are willing to pay more for these cigarettes, and so the tobacco companies are doing research, and they're looking at smokeless products or reduced harm products. But for the most part, the cigarettes are their main business, and it's been very profitable. And Wall Street analysts expect that to continue.
So the fight is still entirely on. Duff Wilson with the New York Times. Thank you very much for joining us, Duff.
Thank you.
We're joined now from Washington by Dr. Cheryl Hilton. She's president and chief executive officer of the American Legacy Foundation. It's a not-for-profit that was established back in 1998 after the big master settlement agreement on tobacco. Dr. Hilton, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here, Tom.
What do you make of this new campaign that's coming down the pike to put big rotten lungs and dead bodies and toe tags on corpses in morgues, all that right on the cigarette pack? Why is the FDA turning to that very vivid kind of a marketing campaign against cigarettes? Why not just the Surgeon General's warning on the pack?
Well, the key reason is that it works. And it works not only in other countries, but it will work in this country as one of the most important elements of a broad arsenal of efforts to try to reduce smoking in the U.S., which, as you noted earlier, has stalled tragically.
20.6% of the country's adults, that's 46.6 million people, roughly now smoke, and 19.5%, almost as high among high school students. That would suggest that the next generation is not much less than the adults in front of them right now, Dr. Hilton.
That's true, but the good news is that the rates among young people have plummeted since 1997, which is really, really good news. The problem is that that decline, too, has stalled. I think it's really important to understand that these graphic warnings, which have worked elsewhere, and we can talk about why they work and what the biggest contribution they make is, but they are just one of the ways that we need to counteract the more than $12 billion a year that's spent by the tobacco industry in the U.S. alone marketing their product. The influence of tobacco manufacturers and tobacco marketing is really endemic throughout the United States. Historically, tobacco played a very important role in the beginning economy of the U.S., and therefore it has had a sort of exalted place that slowly but surely is being eroded, and it should be eroded because it is a product that, when used as directed, kills 50% of its customers. So that's the bottom line. If we want to keep shelling out literally $100 billion a year in healthcare costs and $100 billion a year in lost productivity and 1,200 deaths every day, if we want to keep doing that, then we can sit back and let the tobacco industry have its way with us. That's not what Americans want. Americans want to fight back. And the treaty that Duff was just talking about, the global treaty, really sends another message. The whole world wants to fight back. And I think it's incredibly ironic that Philip Morris is suing this fairly small country in South America to stop them from trying to protect their citizens, most of whom, the ones who smoke, are low income and dirt poor. So the irony of the power of Philip Morris versus these poor people who have so many strikes against them now, including, you know, a lifelong addiction, the irony, it can't be lost on any of your listeners.
I see Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York stepping up in the last 24 hours to say he will help Uruguay fight that fight. Why do you think the decline in smoking has leveled off in this country? After all the years of advertising against it, everybody knows now it can kill you, it can kill those around you. Why isn't the portion of American smoking still dropping?
Well, there are many reasons. There are lots of reasons. One is the continued pumping in of massive amounts of marketing dollars all over the place, on the internet, through various forms of media, magazine advertising, billboard advertising, point-of-purchase advertising, that keeps drawing young people into the fray. The other is increasing the amount of nicotine delivered by cigarettes. Another is improving the manufacturing of cigarettes so it's easier for young kids to smoke, menthol being a wonderful example of an additive that makes it easier for young people to smoke. And then the other side of it, of course, is it's addictive. And the problem with something that is addictive is that leaving it is not a cognitive process. It's very hard to think your way out of an addiction. Most people, in order to successfully quit, need some form of specific treatment.
We're just now seeing a moment where
that's being expanded by our government, which is thankfully a wonderful thing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've been joined from Washington by Dr. Cheryl Hilton. She's president and chief executive officer of the American Legacy Foundation. It's a nonprofit that works against cigarette smoking. She's a professor of clinical public health at Columbia University. We're joined right now as well from Philadelphia by Andrew Strasser, professor of psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania. Andrew Strasser, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Tell us about this campaign that's coming down the pike. They've got 36 or so images now that they're looking at. So, I don't know, 9 or 12 of them will start going on cigarette packs. I think, is it 2011, 2012 we'll see them in the stores? And this is by law? What kind of images are they looking to put on cigarette packages, Andrew Strasser?
Well, it's an interesting combination of very vivid images. They're available online now to view. Some are very graphic and personal, so a person with a hole in their throat trying to smoke. Things like a person in a body bag, images such as that. And there's others that they get at sort of the secondhand smoke and issues, or they're trying to avoid smoking during pregnancy. So there's a range of images and messaging available.
You've got a mother blowing smoke in her baby's face. You've got somebody with a cigarette poking it into their forearm, like shooting up heroin. You've got somebody here on one of these. Looks like it's a guy who had a tracheotomy, and he's still smoking, and he's exhaling smoke through that hole in the base of his throat. What's the psychology of these, Andrew Strasser? I mean, what does it take? Can you show somebody an image so gross that they say, oh my gosh, that's it, I'm done with smoking?
That's one of the parts. I mean, in a sense, the warning labels that have been used in the United States for the recent past have been behind what other countries have shown. And so these graphic images have been shown to be effective elsewhere. It increases the knowledge of the harms that people are incurring when they're smoking, and it does lead to action, so seeking treatment to quit. We have to think about it in a way that a pack-a-day smoker is viewing these images up to 7,000 times a year at a moment that they're about to light up. So it's sort of an effective direct-to-consumer way to get the health message and the health warning to them.
But how strong is that psychological hit? I mean, I remember, this is years ago now, I used to work with a guy who had some lung cancer or had been warned that he showed signs that it may be coming on. He had on his desk, under the glass on top of his desk, he had enormous pictures of the most grotesque, rotten, tumor-filled lungs you can imagine. And then he had the surgery, he had a tracheotomy, he had the hole in his throat, and, you know, we'd take a break there. This is at a newspaper in Hong Kong. We'd go down to the little, bar after work, and he would do it. He would smoke through that hole in his throat. So he had both the tracheotomy, all the pictures you could imagine, and still he's smoking. I mean, how strong is the grip of this stuff, Andrew?
Well, we have to remember that the nicotine in the cigarette is an addictive compound, and it drives the smoking behavior. It's very difficult to stop smoking. And so if we can provide information, reminders to smokers that this is something that they should consider not doing and give them an option to seek treatment, I think that's a very important first step. We know from some of the research that's gone on in other countries looking at assessing smokers' knowledge, their understanding, and their action. Before these were brought online and compared to once they're brought out on a national level, that the images that have elicit a cognitive response, that have a negative emotional reaction, those are the ones that are best remembered, that the message is remembered, that are more likely to lead to some action or an intent to quit or to seek treatment. So these graphic images are good. They're a great first step, but if we look globally, several countries have used much more graphic images that, perhaps that's what we'll need down the road. One of the options with this, with the new graphic warning labels is that we'll be able to rotate through, and it may be that we need to introduce even more graphic images somewhere in the near future.
Cheryl Hilton, we've got all kinds of response here online. Here's a listener in Canada says, we've had these kind of images on cigarettes for years in Ontario, combined with increasing cigarette prices, and boy have they ever, and ever expanding ban on where you can smoke. This listener says, I think they're effective. But, you know, we've got pushback here as well. Thomas says, what next? Photos of venereal disease on liquor bottles, pictures of unhappy wives on your Super Bowl tickets. And Gary says, you will pry my last cigarette from my cold, dead fingers. Maybe so. Want to take them from me? Bring a gun, he says, Cheryl. I mean, people have all kinds of reactions when you sort of come at them psychologically or price-wise or any other way on cigarettes.
Those are great comments, particularly the first one that is acknowledging that all these things work together. I'm very familiar with the situation in Canada. My entire family is Canadian. I've spent a lot of time up there.
And they've got these images already? Have you seen them?
Oh, they've had these images for many, many years, and they have done research both on the impact of the images on adults as well as on adolescents. And so we're talking about two things here. We're talking about how these images contribute to encouraging people to quit smoking and lessen the amount that they are smoking, where there's quite strong evidence that it does the latter, and also what it does in terms of adolescence. And what we know about adolescence is that those graphic images that talk about what the losses are related to smoking are more salient to them than promises of a positive future outcome. So that's one thing. And we also know that in Canada, specifically, young people forgo more cigarettes, talk about the labels, and think about the labels when they're not viewing them. So in a sense, one way of looking at these is to think of them as haunting images. And I know personally, I was a smoker for a very long time. I tried many times to quit. I actually was still smoking when the labels came out in Canada, and I know my own reaction was one of revulsion. I did think a lot about the labels, and I mentioned, and I think it's worth noting, and this will probably happen in this country, they're so disturbing to people that there became a market in Canada for things to slip in to cover up the graphic image.
Well, like a little iPhone holder, instead you're going to have a little leather packet for your cigarette pack so you don't have to look at that?
Well, a little something you slip in between the cellophane and the pack for those that have cellophane. champagne. Yeah.
Oh, geez, who wants to look at that?
But the good news is finally we have these labels. It's sad that one of the leading tobacco exporters of the globe, probably the leading exporter of tobacco worldwide, took this long to get the kind of graphic warning labels that our friends just north of us have had for over a decade.
This is part of a bigger package of federal moves here. What else is coming down the pike, Cheryl, on the smoking front?
Well, last week they held a press event, the FDA and HHS, FDA, of course, being part of HHS, and they announced major initiatives in four areas to improve the public health system and strengthen the implementation of evidence-based tobacco control interventions. Some were already discussed from your email: raising the price of cigarettes, restricting places where you can smoke, public education campaigns, mass media campaigns like the Truth Campaign that Legacy has operated for a decade. They're seeking to engage the public and change social norms around tobacco use even further. Obviously, the less acceptable it is, the more likely people are to quit. They want to lead by example and improve the whole HHH system to create a society free of tobacco-related disease and death, and they want to further advance knowledge about what works. They will be studying these labels. The point that was just made earlier, that these labels are not among the most graphic out there, I think that's interesting, and I think they may, in fact, evolve into a more graphic label.
Yeah,
cartoon-like.
Right. I mean, they aren't all, but I was struck at how they're kind of graphically nice instead of some in other countries. There's just nothing nice about them. They're just completely gross. These are sort of, you know, nicely composed. I mean, they're gross,
yes.
but they're nicely composed. You know,
it may be a little too nice.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll talk about the psychology of that. We've got an ad man coming in to look at that with us in a minute here. I wondered about this. You know, with budgets being cut back, a lot of cessation programs are being hit around the country. Now, you know, what's the power of the image versus actually getting somebody into, I don't know, a support group to help them quit? What's more important here, Dr. Hilton?
Well, there's no question about it. If I had to choose between labels and treatment, I would choose treatment. Treatment is absolutely crucial. We now, unlike 30 years ago, we now have ways to really help people who need to quit smoking succeed in doing so. And for those listeners who were like me and had a multi-pack-a-day habit or even a pack-a-day habit, there is help out there. And my motto is quit early and often. Do not get demoralized. Do not wait until next New Year's. Keep trying. Keep rotating the different types of medications that you can use to help you quit, and eventually you will succeed. You won't succeed if you don't keep trying. And there's nothing more important for someone to do for their health and longevity if they're a smoker than quit smoking. Don't kid yourself because you run and you have a nice diet and you do other good things. If you're smoking, you're just putting a nail in your coffin.
Let's get our callers in here. James in Buffalo, New York. James, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I feel that this program is fantastic. If it helps anybody get off smoking, whether they be minors or young, to the elderly, I think it's a great program. My mother's father was a very heavy smoker, and my mm-hmm. mother never smoked, but she developed lung cancer at a very, very young age, and she died at 46, and she died a horrendous death. And I have several people now that I know, three have passed away, all smokers, and it's just amazing and terrible how these people suffer. And a very good friend of mine who was an ex-Marine, he was in great condition, but also a very heavy smoker. Always took himself, you know, besides smoking, he was 240 pounds.
Yeah.
He was the pinnacle of strength. And he died a broken man and at the weight of about 83 pounds.
From smoking, from cancer, I guess.
From cancer.
Yeah.
He was a very heavy smoker.
It's pretty incredible.
And it was just amazing how this man just languished and suffered and due to smoking. And he would tell me every day, he says, Jimmy, don't ever pick up the habit.
Yeah, no kidding. Do not ever pick it up. I remember years ago, you know, I was a senior in high school working as a janitor. I'd never punched a clock. We worked a lot on the farm. I never punched a clock. And working as a janitor, and at the breaks, all the other janitors smoked. And so there you go. 15 minutes to start, 15 years to stop. You know, it's years and years ago that I quit now. But how I wish I had never, ever touched it in the first place. James, thanks for your call. Linda in Colchester, Vermont. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that it's been 25 years since I quit smoking, and I could totally start again without any problem, so I just don't touch it. I also had a question. My son quit smoking, but unfortunately he picked up the chewing tobacco or whatever it's called
that they
put on the inside of the gum. So mm-hmm. That is even worse to quit from. So I'm wondering if there's going to be labels on for that.
That's a good question. And Cheryl Hilton, how about it? On your snuff, chewing tobacco, also going to have the big gross pictures?
I'm not certain if that's the case. There may be another person who's on who does know that. It certainly should be there.
And there's plenty of marketing for that that goes in the other direction. We're looking at smoking and what it takes to stop smoking. I want to bring another voice into our conversation right now, if I may. Andrew Strasser, Cheryl Hilton, please stand by. Joining me in the studio is Paul Nelson. He's Executive Vice President, Executive Director of the ad agency Arnold Communications, which has been behind the award-winning Truth campaign designed to drive young people away from smoking. He works on the account, created in 2000, recently voted Campaign of the Decade by Adweek's readers. Paul Nelson, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you're an ad guy, and yet this boils down to living to life and death. You know, what have you learned by trying to do this to keep teenagers off of it? Is it the grossest picture out there that's going to be the thing that stops somebody, or is it something else?
You know, I think it's important. What we've learned with the Truth campaign is teenagers know that smoking's bad for them. And they've got a lot of people telling them what they shouldn't do. And, mm-hmm. and we've learned that, you know, we don't want to go out there and tell teenagers not to smoke. So with Truth, you know, what we attempt to do is give teenagers real facts and information about tobacco, the industry, the health effects, and the social consequences of it. And we let them make up their own minds. So, you know, we respect teenagers and we give them the power to make their own decisions on whether or not they choose to smoke.
Andrew Strasser, what is that kind of campaign up against? Here's a great campaign, and yet we still have, and no doubt has stopped kids from smoking, but yet we've still got 19.5% of high school students smoking. I mean, what's the power of a factual message or a potent, ugly image up against, I don't know, the power of seeing one rock star lighting up after a concert or one movie star is smoking a cigarette?
Well, you know, the Federal Trade Commission estimates that about $13.11 billion of tobacco industry-sponsored advertising occurred in 2007. So that's a massive amount of money that's going toward telling someone about their product. To see someone of a celebrity nature, movie star, athlete or something using a product goes a long way. And you know, the younger adolescent teen crowd are very savvy with social marketing, and we've really seen an increase in how ads and informational pieces of well-produced advertising goes up on YouTube and Twitter and things like that tell about some of these new products that are coming onto the market. So there's other ways to get the message to recruit the smokers.
Cheryl, this was almost made illegal. I mean, sort of, it was going to be covered like a drug by the FDA in the battle that took place on Capitol Hill, what, a year and a half ago? They missed that by a hair, but, you know, you look at all this death, and then you say, well, is this different than, I don't know, barbiturates or heroin? I mean, a lot of people have done it for a long time. I did it, but it's deadly. Why do we futz around with pictures on packets? Why not just say, no, I mean, I know it doesn't work. You know, drugs are illegal and we still use them, but why is this a different case?
Well, there are many reasons it's a different case, but I'd argue one of the primary reasons it's a different case is that the tobacco industry is enormously politically powerful in the U.S. and around the world, but it's particularly powerful in the state houses across this country and in the Senate and the House. About 50% of all legislative people around this country accept donations from the tobacco industry. When they don't like something, they make it known. And I would argue that we did not come close to banning tobacco in the legislation on the Hill. We didn't come anywhere near close. And in fact, the legislation specifically says you can't ban tobacco ever.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about getting gruesome in the fight against cigarette smoking, putting photos of dead smokers and diseased lungs right on the cigarette pack. It's been a big issue for a long time. Here's a little bit from season 4 of Mad Men, which, of course, is set back in the 50s, early 60s. This is Don Draper of the fictional advertising firm Sterling Cooper Draper Price. He takes on big tobacco in the show after losing a cigarette account as an ad guy. Here's Draper reads from the full-page ad he takes out in the New York Times entitled, Why I'm Quitting Tobacco.
Recently, my advertising agency ended a long relationship with Lucky Strike Cigarettes. And I'm relieved. For over 25 years, we devoted ourselves to peddling a product for which good work is irrelevant, because people can't stop themselves from buying it. A product that never improves, causes illness, and makes people unhappy. But there was money in it. A lot of money. In fact, our entire business depended on it.
Yeah, and sold a lot of cigarettes for a long time, the little fictional retreat from cigarettes in Mad Men. Of course, we've got big anti-smoking campaigns now as well. Here's just a little bit from the anti-smoking truth campaign. Two cowboys ride in on horseback to a crowded New York street, sit down in the middle of the road, sing a song. The catch is, one cowboy can only be heard through a hole in his throat. You can see the video at our website, onpointradio.org.
You don't know we die from tobacco. Sometimes you just lose a lung. Sometimes they just snip out your tongue, and you won't sing worth the heck with a big hole in your neck.
Cause you don't always die from tobacco.
Cause you don't always die from tobacco. Yippee-ki-yo.
A duet and one singing through a hole in his throat. You can picture it. Eric in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Eric, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I was a two-pack-a-day smoker for about 8 years, and the warnings just weren't going to stop me, and I don't think a giant graphic label is going to stop smokers either. They're just going to put the pack picture side down or just not look at it. I think it's kind of wishful thinking that people who are addicted to nicotine are just, you know, going to be put off by a picture, however graphic. It's so addictive. I quit 7 years ago, and I think about smoking every day.
And you don't think a picture would have helped you stop? But, you know, we all have images in our minds. I mean, back in the day, it was Marlboro men and all that stuff. These macho men out on the great, you know, beautiful mountains. I mean, you must have had images in your mind when you smoked up, when you pictured yourself holding that cigarette. You know, from the movies, Bogey, I don't know what. I mean, maybe it would have helped to have some other image in there. What do you think, Eric?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't really influenced, I don't think, by the Marlboro Man, but all my friends smoked, and, you know, we'd go to the bars, and everyone was smoking and drinking. That's just where it happened.
How did you finally shake it, Eric? How did you do it?
I quit cold turkey. I had met a woman who eventually became my wife, and I had told her I had quit, so I had to quit, because she didn't want to be around any smokers.
You quit for a woman. Bravo you. That's great. Now your wife. That's really great, Eric. I appreciate your call. Let's get one more. Columbus, Georgia. Kendall. Kendall, you're on the air.
Tom, how you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Just lived in Australia for a couple of years. They already had this going on, and it actually kind of became a joke amongst my smoking friends more than anything. So I... from personal experience, I don't see it being terribly effective.
You saw it, and it didn't. You don't think it was so. I mean, how do people joke about rotten lungs? You know, what's funny about it, Kendall?
Well, I mean, I think when you're, you know, 16, 18, 20, you're not aware of your own mortality, and you just think you're going to live forever, even though everyone around you tells you you're not. You know, you don't believe it, and you're going to do what you want to do, and especially anybody that's trying to be, you know, edgier on the fringe.
Yep.
It's just one more thing to do to be a part of that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Andrew Strasser, how does that work? I mean, kids, they feel immortal. Everybody knows it. The cigarette's not going to get them. It'll get somebody else. And then later on in a smoker's life, it seemed to me, seeing smokers, that in a way they were kind of almost deliberately toying with death, as if even that little high you get from the cigarette is like a little, you know, taste of, I mean, we know from the poets, death can be romantic. Where, you know, how's the psychology work here, Andrew?
Well, you know, you're countering the to have a cigarette, and it's rewarding in a very proximal amount of time from ingesting, and you're not thinking about what's going to happen 20 years down the road, 25 years down the road. You know, some of the work that's going on in several research labs, including ours, embedded versions of the warning, the graphic warning labels that Canada was using. And, you know, to just in a response to the last two callers, we see that people do get the message. So about double the sample was able to understand and recall what the warning label was compared to just a small text version that's currently on the market. And we used some eye tracking technologies, so sort of regions of the ad that people are paying attention to, and they are paying more attention to those graphic warning labels and getting the message. So although everyone has sort of an anecdotal story of themselves or a friend, mm-hmm. You know, the empirical evidence suggests that, you know, the warning labels do draw attention, and they do help people better understand the messaging. And then when you take it out one step to a global perspective, in many other countries, you have general literacy rates are low, and health literacy rates are very low. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sort of to go with the, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words, and embedding these graphic images can help in a very meaningful way to increase the knowledge. And I would add, I would hope at some point that we could see information for Quitline, whether it's a telephone line or a website address that could be part of it, so that you have this moment where people have an increased knowledge of this health harm that they're about to perform, and well, what's the next step? How make it easy for me to take that next action? Give me some direction, and that would be a great addition to the warning labels as well.
Give them an 800 number they can call to get some guidance on actually how to do it. Right there, we've got it at our website. I mean, Paul Nelson, look at this as a marketing challenge. I mean, great to market if you're a marketer to have an addictive product. I mean, what's better than that? But can you ultimately market an addictive product out of popularity, marketed out of existence?
Hopefully so. I think, you know, Dr. Healton spoke earlier about, you know, the importance of all this is coming at it from many angles. You know, the tobacco industry in the United States spends $34-35 million a day marketing its product. And, you know, to come at it with a marketing campaign, with labels, warning labels on the packs, keep informing kids and smokers that, look, you know, this is something that is going to kill you if you continue to use it, and combat it that way.
Let's go to Robert in Charlottesville, Virginia. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I think some of the pictures I've seen are pretty tame. I'm an anesthesiologist who worked for about 5 years strictly in the head and neck cancer area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of those pictures should show people with half their jaws removed, or the upper jaw and part of their nose removed and part of the tongue's gone. And then they might begin to appreciate more than you can from pictures of diseased lungs, which are not familiar to people, but rather to see the image of a face which everyone recognizes.
And you're talking about damage from tobacco, from smoking, of a jaw gone, a part of a nose gone, a tongue gone.
That's right.
And were you there as an anesthesiologist when they were cutting that stuff out?
Absolutely.
And so people were not left with much of a face.
Well, they try to reconstruct them, and they do a very good job, but believe me, it isn't the same.
I really appreciate your call, Doctor. Cheryl Hilton, how about it? This whole, you know, road opened up earlier this year when, I guess, a federal judge in Kentucky ruled in a lawsuit that the FDA could require graphic warning labels Could they get even more graphic than what we see so far?
I think they can get a lot more graphic, and I think they can work in concert with public education that Legacy underwrites, the Truth Campaign being a major form of public education we underwrite, and also a program called BecomeAnX.org, which is an online program to quit that's free to anyone who goes online. And in fact, we've offered the federal government the rights to take over BecomeAnX precisely because they have stated that they are now going to move into mass public education. I'd like to just comment on Mad Men. Mm-hmm. That was a wonderful clip to play, but I can assure you the fact that very cool-looking men and women are smoking from when that begins to when it ends is a walking advertisement for tobacco
overall,
smoking among young people.
Overall, retro, cool. And
it's making it exceedingly cool. The print advertising integrates Lucky Strike as a brand.
Yeah.
The European ads for Mad Men, which I love, just like everyone else loves, advertises smoking, really, in essence. And I would want to know, are there any financial relationships between the tobacco industry and Mad Men because of the integration of a specific brand, which is precisely the kind of thing that the CDC wants to see end?
Yeah, one speech by Don Draper in the show, probably not an antidote to all that smoking, and there is a lot. Stephen in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, and congratulations to your guest who quit smoking. That's
hear, hear.
Miraculous. I just wanted to remind people that in fact the cigarettes in Massachusetts and New York are actually closer to $10 a pack, and that if you're on any kind of fixed income or living around the poverty line, you're probably paying as much a month to gratify your cigarette habit as you are on rent and food. So it's pretty alarming. As someone who I did quit successfully to this point 2 years ago, and
congratulations.
It's a brutal thing, at least in that early run to kick. And I think part of it is just because the activity of smoking gets really tied to just every activity that you perform during the course of a day, and so.
But as they say in that other campaign, it gets better.
No, it does get better. It does get better, and I have to say, one of the things that I would like to see in the public in the cessation campaign is to focus more on the public costs in compelling ways, because. You know, I think, to hold some of our leaders more accountable too. I don't know if people were aware of the fact that, you know, the incoming Speaker of the House is a professed two-pack-a-day smoker, and I think when he was confronted on it on national news, was sort of standoffish about it, and it felt like, well, this is my private.
You're talking about John Boehner. And, of course, I mean, the word is that the president himself, though he doesn't do it in public, you know, still occasionally has that that smoke outside the West Wing there. I don't know, but it sure goes up high. Let's get one more call here while we have time from down toward tobacco country, Louisville, Kentucky. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to share my story for a brief second and my opinion on this. I smoked for 15 years, 2 to 3 packs a day, quit a year and a half ago, cold turkey, tried multiple times to quit. I grew up close to Canada, seen the graphic labels for years. I feel that they don't work. I think what we need to do as a society and as the researchers and everybody, I'm sure they're doing great work and I appreciate it, but we need to spend more time and effort and money on getting treatment programs for smokers. I originally tried a quit line in a particular state that I was living. Basically, they sent me a couple little pamphlets and a box of patches, and then once a month they would call me and ask me if I quit. There was no support line, no anything, you know, related to quitting other than those pamphlets and the once monthly call for 3 months.
Right.
If we made treatment available to people and to smokers who don't have insurance, made it so they could afford the medications and gave them some options and some availability to see doctors, I think that would truly reduce the smoking rate more than putting a graphic picture on a cigarette
Mike, let us pick it up right there. Our time is short. Cheryl Hilton, how about it? I mean, is there enough available when it comes to helping? 90 or 100 billion a year we spend, you know, on the health costs and more on productivity. What about the cost of really helping people get off cigarettes?
There is not enough help out there, though the hopefully if it sticks, the health plan that has been proposed by the Obama administration would massively increase the access to smoking cessation services. And the caller is precisely correct. This is sorely needed, as is the caller who talked about the price. If you're going to charge poor people $10 a pack, I think there's a moral obligation to reach out a helping hand. And that is absolutely crucial to happen, and it will help drive down the smoking rates. And graphic warning labels are not a replacement for smoking cessation programs. And I think our present government would agree with that statement. They are not a replacement. They are part of an arsenal in a war on the leading cause of death in the United States, which claims more lives than any other cause of death in this country.
Paul, you're the pro. You're looking at some of these with us right here, right now. I mean, here's a smoke in a baby's face, the syringe cigarette in the arm, the tracheotomy. Think it'll work?
You know, a combination of many among, you know, other channels, you know, it will all have an effect in taking on this epidemic.
Well, it is one kind of vicious addiction, but you can break free of it. Know that. A lot of people have done it, and you can do it, too. And if you haven't smoked, don't start. You don't want that monkey on your back. We're going to be seeing a lot more of this right on the pack soon. Paul Nelson with Arnold Communications, thank you so much for being here today. Cheryl Hilton in New York with American Legacy, thank you so much for joining us. And Andrew Strasser in Philadelphia. Thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.